I did just lead chapel.
Ooh.
Went over Thanksgiving. We wrote a Thanksgiving pumpkin.
Oh.
You wrote on a Thanksgiving pumpkin?
Yeah, that's what we do here at church.
For sure.
Yeah,
what are the kids thankful for?
Well, that's a great question.
That's unclear.
Because I say, what are you thankful for? Everybody raise your hand if you got something. And they all raise their hands.
Yep.
Uh-huh. And when you call on them, they have nothing.
No. Right. What? Who are you?
They just stand confused about...
Why did you say my name?
Yeah. The first girl did say mice, and I
mice.
Appreciate that.
Love it. I'm thankful for mice.
Now, evidently, according to the teacher, she said friends, but I heard mice, and I think that's what she said.
Probably.
All right, welcome back to the Beyond Sunday podcast. We're exploring how to take our faith beyond Sunday morning. This is Patrick Nazaroff. With me, as always, Pastor Dave Bowser.
How are we doing, Patrick?
And Elise McCarter.
Still here. Still pretty successful.
All right.
You're coming day after...
Did you forget your line for a minute?
No, I burped right before I was supposed to come on.
Okay, wow. your Yeti over here, or your Stanley?
Right. It's wink, wink, water.
Wink, wink, water.
Yes. It is water.
I think we should market a new brand of water that we call wink, wink, water.
Wink, wink, water. It's really just water.
It's water, but just water.
You can be like wink, wink, water.
It's wink, wink, water. It's the new Awkwafina.
Yeah, we're coming in the day after Election Day. So.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Morning after.
Is that a play on words?
No, it is the morning after the election. That's what it is.
With morning?
I was not trying to.
Oh, the morning after.
Yes.
Yeah. Yep. I get it now.
I was more clever than even I knew. Look at that.
Yeah. Obviously, we feel some people in our social circles, our social media, our church are elated, and some are incredibly dismayed. You know, so I don't think anybody's out there to be like, "Hey, what's going on?"
Yeah.
You know,
I don't get it.
Yeah.
I would love to be you if you exist.
I know. Maybe
tell me your secrets.
Try to be you. How could I get to that place where I don't know anything?
Sure.
Ignorance may be bliss.
It might be.
Yeah.
It's a possibility.
Yeah. But here we are. And I'm sure, you know, whether you are elated or depressed come this following Monday, it's a difficult time or an exciting time for you. But
it is.
For the country, I think it's a difficult time regardless. And it would have been probably regardless whomever won.
Yeah,
right.
I agree.
Just because of such a divide.
Yeah.
And I think that's been hard.
Then we're going to talk a little bit about division today. That's going to be a little bit what we're talking about. Yeah.
Yes. Math.
That's right.
Long division, baby.
What does the Bible say about math?
It is not for it. It is against math.
I'm anti. Yeah. You know, it's got some math parts. You know, we got like boat dimensions.
But it's mostly just like counting. It's not like not like calculus.
I did read a story today about like a giant that Moses kills, and it talks about how big his bed is. Like that's what they want to tell
you. That's the measurement of
a giant. That Moses kills?
Yeah, they kill Og. You know,
Og.
Yeah, the Israelites kill the army of Og.
Yeah,
and then it's like, and he had a
roof. Thought that was his name.
And then
he's
got
a really big.
His
bed.
Iron bed was 13 feet by 9 feet.
Wow, that's
a big bed.
That's a big bed. So iron.
I wouldn't hate
Come on,
it.
Og.
maybe it's the frame.
Throw down some pelts or something. You know, I know you don't have a California king or anything back then, but a memory foam. But you got something you can throw down.
9 by 13. That's a big bed.
It is a big bed.
That's a big bed. Yeah,
bigger than a California king.
What kind of hut did he have to go around this big bed?
I'm sure he's got you know some servants that are carrying his bed around.
People,
right.
You know.
His iron bed.
The secret though is Og is actually like 5 feet tall. He just
he likes his space.
Really big bed.
He's like Lord Farquaad.
<That's right. laughs> Solid track reference. I appreciate that. Yeah.
All right, let's get to our news story.
Let's
do
it.
Let me pull this up. All right, have you heard that if you give like an infinite number of monkeys, an infinite number of time, they eventually write the works of Shakespeare?
I have heard that. I don't know if that's actually true, but I've heard that.
Yeah. I've never heard this theory.
It is a thing that is out there that you give an infinite monkeys an infinite amount of time and a typewriter.
I'm just wondering if this is like the Roman Empire and the flying a plane thing, where it's like something that men think about all the time.
Right.
And you as a woman who is actually a writer is like, no, that's never going to happen. We're like, monkeys could totally write Shakespeare. That's fine. Monkeys could do it. Inevitably, they'd come up with it. It'd be fine.
Right.
Well, you just like by random pressing of keys, they would eventually get,
they're going to get Shakespeare.
You know, the right random, you know,
the right combination. Like
I think an episode of The Simpsons does have this where Mr. Burns, the evil, oil tycoon, or energy tycoon. He's not oil, it's coal, I think. Or nuclear energy.
Nuclear,
He has an army of monkeys typing, and he picks up one and says, the best of times, the blurst of times.
The blurst.
And yells at the monkey, obviously.
So. Yeah, so close.
That's pretty funny.
All right, well, some Australian mathematicians
have
decided to figure out, could an infinite number of monkeys with an infinite number of time write the works of Shakespeare?
Okay. What'd they come up with?
No.
Yeah.
What's a mathematician know about this? They're not an artist.
I mean, you think about every single letter, potential combination that goes
infinite,
into that.
Infinite.
Okay.
Basically, here's their math. And this is okay. This is peer reviewed, by the way.
Okay.
They got
our funding dollars.
First,
Australia's funding dollars.
Sure. That's fine.
How many chimps are in the world? We're starting there.
No, it's an infinite number of chimps.
Well, you don't have an infinite number of chimps. We got to start with.
But that's how
the chimps
that's
we
how
have,
the problem
not the chimps
works.
We want.
We have 20.
Not the chimps we
have
deserve.
200,000 chimpanzees in the world.
Well, that's problem number one. We've been killing off the chimps too fast.
We need
fast.
More chimps.
Right, right. How are we ever going to get chimp Shakespeare? Chimpspear? If we keep mowing down the chimp habitats.
Yeah. Exactly.
Okay. Then, if you give them like, they would hit one key per second until the end of the universe.
Until the end of the universe. All
okay.
Right.
So 200,000 chimps, one key per second until the end of the universe.
Correct.
And okay. What are we forecasting that to
yeah,
be?
Yeah, well, how far did they give us?
They basically surmised the universe would end before monkeys could do this.
I believe that.
They say, okay, look, a 5% chance that a single chimp would successfully type the word bananas.
Bananas.
In their lifetime.
Yeah.
So 1 in 20 monkeys is able to type the word bananas before it's no longer with us. Yeah.
Before the monkey dies.
Okay. This is one of those things where I feel like maybe the chimp is a little bit too dexterous for this job, because there's been times when like my cat has walked across my keyboard and I'm like, actually.
Not bad.
Right. But the like something about that dexterity, you know, it feels like it might actually work against them.
So let me ask this. If we have the 200,000 chimps who have an infinite amount of time, they're continuing to have chimp babies, right?
Well, not if they're typing one key per second. I mean, they
right, there's no time. Know. There's no
but,
time. Yeah.
But they're saying...
this is how the chimps go extinct.
But they're saying the chimp is only going
to
type...
They're committed to their labor, okay? They're artists.
They're saying the chimp is only going to type bananas in its lifetime.
In its lifetime. One in 20 chimps will type the word bananas in their lifetime.
Okay, but its lifetime is what, like 50 years, 60 years?
Sure.
Chimps live pretty long, I think.
I don't know how long, yeah.
But I haven't looked it up.
If you either A, multiply that out, how many different bananas can you get? I mean, that's a lot. And B, if they were having chimp babies, theoretically, every generation of chimp babies would be getting more likely to have, if you bred the banana typers with the banana typers, you'd be getting closer and closer to Shakespeare.
Oh, you're getting close to talking about evolution here. Better watch out.
Yeah. The probability of one chimp constructing a random sentence such as, I chimp, therefore I am.
I chimp, therefore I am.
Comes at 1 in 10 million billion billion.
That seems like a real big number. I don't know how many zeros that is.
So we're saying there's a chance.
All right, so here's what I'm taking away with this. I am more likely to be able to land a 747
oh,
in an emergency
gosh.
Situation than a chimp is to come up with Shakespeare. I got it. Okay, there we go.
Slightly.
Slightly more likely.
Slightly more likely.
Yeah. Yeah, there you go. So what do you think? Could the chimps do it?
Apparently not.
Are you a chimp believer?
I do believe.
I'm a chimp hater.
Can they do the chimp possible?
The chimp possible.
I believe in the power of chimps. But apparently the math is against me. I don't know. You know?
Yeah.
But like the 1980s America's hockey team, you got to ask yourself, do you believe in miracles?
Yeah, there you go. 1 in 10 million, billion, billion to type one sentence.
That's a lot of zeros. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So you're going to need a lot of chimp babies to get there.
Sure.
Right.
Yeah.
To get to I chimp, therefore I am. Which is not even Shakespeare.
Like, no.
That's fair. Yeah, you're
that
like.
That might be plagiarism.
Yeah.
Is it plagiarism if the chimp does it?
The family of William Shakespeare is coming after those chimps.
Right.
Yeah. Who may not even exist, right? Yeah, and there's
the family.
No, Shakespeare may not even exist.
Well, there's a lot of speculation that Shakespeare was a woman, so.
Yeah.
Yeah, there's a lot of speculation on Shakespeare. Was he
a chimp?
Three chimps in a trench coat.
Yes. Yeah, maybe.
Most likely scenario.
Three well-trained chimps.
Chimps have already written the verse of Shakespeare. We called them Shakespeare. What was Shakespeare's middle name? Did he have a middle name?
Shakes.
William Shakespeare.
Yeah.
those are the three chimps. It was William Shakes and Pierre.
Pierre or Spear?
Is it Shakes or Shake?
That's a good question.
I would say Shakes and Pierre, mm-hmm. personally.
Yeah, I think so.
Okay.
Maybe it was actually Pierre William Shakes. That sounds like a better name.
Well,
how? Pierre William Shakes.
Yeah, Pierre William Shakes. It sounds vaguely British.
Maybe they got in the wrong
William
order
Shakes
in
of Hertfordshire, right? Yeah, there you go. Yeah, just add a shire to the end of it. Pierre William Shakes Shire.
Woo, we're off the rails.
All right, let's get to our real thing here from Christianity Today.
Our friends.
Yeah. Sure.
Ish. CT.
Yep. Oh, we're on a nickname basis.
Sure. We're bros.
Okay. CT. Yes. Paul's prescription for a polarized church.
There are lots of P's in
You're
that.
Right. Paul's prescription for a polarized
Very alliterative
church.
There. Church. It's the P is silent.
I fixed it for you.
We've been spelling it wrong all these years. It's really pterodactyl.
By Julian C.H. Smith.
There really should be a P in her name. Pajulian.
I think that might be a man.
Julian.
Julian?
Julian.
Either way. It should have a P in it.
I'm guessing dude with Julian.
Yeah. Okay, fair enough.
Jillian, that's girl all the way.
Yep.
Fine. Well, whatever. You gender your names however you want.
Shakes.
It should have a P.
That's chimp.
Shakes is chimp.
Well, we don't know what the CH is. Maybe that CH, maybe that's chimp.
Yeah.
Oh. What are the odds that a chimp writes this article?
1 in 10 million billion billion.
Hold on. I want to go back to the chimps for just a second. Are the odds that they're writing the entire collected works of Shakespeare or just like anything that is Shakespeare?
A sentence
of Shakespeare?
Well, did Shakespeare say bananas?
Done. 1 in 20.
Right.
I'm pretty sure I remember that from Hamlet where he has a monologue. And says,
where Shakespeare says, this mess is bananas. B-A-N-A-N-A-S.
Yes. He's speaking to the skull at that point, right, too, yeah. I think, yes.
To be or not to be bananas. Which is basically surmises that scene, right? That
is right. The question. Yeah. It was bananas.
It was.
Being honest.
All right. Back to Sir Julian.
I don't think he's a sir.
Just Julian.
Just Julian.
Sorry. Got carried away.
All right. Paul's prescription for a polarized church.
Okay.
We felt this was appropriate on an election. You know, a contentious election.
Sure.
And we definitely are seeing a polarized nation, and I think by default, a polarized church.
Mm-hmm.
Even though we did have a debate on a previous podcast, is the church going to continue to be a big tent, or are we all going to find our political identities and then go to church with people who are already the same?
That was, what, 2 or 3 weeks ago?
Not that long.
Right. Yeah. Sounds about right. Yeah.
In the recent memory. Is it possible that was on an episode that we pre-recorded for when it comes
so.
Out? Okay.
I don't think so. Yes.
Well.
If you haven't heard that yet.
Teaser.
You will. How many chimps would it take to finally record an episode of Beyond Sunday?
One about
More
5 minutes.
Three.
Yeah. Once they figure out how to turn on the audio, okay, man, I think they're
they
good.
They got it. They figured it out.
Yeah. All right. So he's going to be talking about the book of Romans.
Okay. I like Romans.
Yeah. Yeah. So Romans is this the last letter of Paul or one of the last letters of Paul?
Yeah. It depends on who you ask. One of the last. Yeah.
One of the last. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Maybe I think the Timothys and the Tituses might be after. I think this is really his last, like, to a church letter.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Some people will say that he wrote some letters from house arrest in Rome. Other people will say that those letters were actually written earlier or that they were perhaps written by someone else. So there's debate. But yeah, Rome is definitely his biggest letter. And he lays out a lot of his theology. It's very theologically heavy in a way that other letters are more practical. But yeah.
Yeah. All right, so we start.
Great book. Real page turner.
And this is honestly a pretty good article here.
Okay.
And even in terms of like writing, I think that Christianity Today raised the bar. Julian raised the bar.
Wow.
I'm going to give him a sir just for that. Good job, Sir Julian.
We're not frequently able to say that about our articles.
A chimp might not write this in their own lifetime. Yeah. Yeah.
All right. If you've recently witnessed an instance of intolerant contempt, the telltale symptom of an increasingly polarized society, you might find yourself wondering, why can't we just all get along? If only we could learn to at least tolerate one another.
Why can't we be friends?
Mm.
Yeah. All right. And he kind of translates this, like, we've probably all seen this on Thanksgiving family reunions.
Mm. Yes. Yeah.
Sure.
Where we pray, all we talk about is football. Yep. And even then, it might get, you know, it might get heated.
I'm excited for that for us.
For Thanksgiving or for talking about football?
Not for talking about football, just for the Thanksgiving.
Sure.
Yeah.
Fallout. It sounds fun.
Yeah. Do you have a nuclear turkey or are you having Thanksgiving fallout?
That's no, I'm just saying. Just like for us as a collective, I'm excited for us. I'm rooting for us.
All right.
He says, even if we escape the day without argument, we may be left with a hollow sense of sadness on our way home. Yes, we may have succeeded in tolerating our enemies, in quotes, but our hearts yearn for something more. Love.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, I think he says, you know, when the enemies are distant, the question of loving them can be conveniently ignored.
Sure.
Yeah. But when enemy is across the table in the same committee meeting in a group project.
On a podcast. Oh, wait. Sorry.
Wow.
Just throwing it out there.
Writing Chimp Shakespeare next to you.
That's right. Yeah.
Yeah. The countercultural wisdom and necessity of Jesus' commands, love your enemy who is your neighbor, becomes apparent. And I think that this is what it is, right? Like when the political enemy is a screen name,
mm-hmm.
it's easy to ignore the command to love or even to feel love or our desire for love. But when it is family member,
mm-hmm.
friend,
mm-hmm.
Spouse, you know, like I think that this can be much more difficult and challenging, especially come to church. And like we said, some people yesterday at church were happy and excited and thinking our future of the nation is in a great place. And some people are incredibly dismayed and thinking, will we ever recover?
Yep.
You know, like, and probably one of those two extremes.
Yeah.
You know, very few in between.
Yep.
Yeah. So that's going to lead us to Romans.
Okay.
All right. So we've talked in the past, the early church had a pretty wide divide.
Yes.
Between the idea of what happens with converting Gentiles?
Yes.
This was their big question. And
do you have to become Jewish to follow Jesus?
They fought it out. Yeah.
They did.
And the big things were
going
to be
with their words, like big boys. They used their words and they fought it out.
Not always.
Can you guarantee it did not come to fisticuffs?
I mean, nowhere in the Bible does it say it came to fisticuffs.
Paul was like kicked out of cities.
Yeah, but he wasn't kicked out of cities over that question. He was kicked out of cities because he was preaching Jesus in general. When it came to him and Peter, like discussing like how they were going to happen, they had a conversation. Like they talked about it. They had a council.
Right. Yeah. I think it did get contentious.
It got contentious.
Yeah,
they used their words.
Yeah, and so they're asking a question: do Gentiles need to be circumcised?
Sure.
What about
question at the forefront of my mind?
Yeah, it's we debated to this day.
It's pronounced no,
right, foreskin. Yeah. Yes. We can say that because it's in the Bible.
Oh, okay.
Many times.
Too many for comfort, frankly.
Sometimes when you're like, I want to marry this girl,
nope.
Collect a bag.
Nope.
Foreskins. Yeah. Yeah.
Nope.
Yeah. No, yes.
It is so, in the Bible, I know, but is, yeah. But
so wouldn't recommend that as a modern day technique.
Save that in the back pocket for the coming Valentine's Day. Just saying, everybody.
Dear God.
Every kiss begins with...
Oh, yikes. Nope.
Bag of foreskins.
Okay. All right. All right.
All right. Yeah. Circumcision.
Uh-huh.
Do we keep Jewish holidays?
Sure.
That's the other question.
Passover?
Yeah. Passover.
Do we need that?
Do we still celebrate Passover?
Purim?
Passover. Yeah.
Yom Kippur?
And then... do we keep kosher? Those are kind of the big three.
Can I eat bacon yet?
Yeah. That they're going to debate.
That's at the forefront of my mind.
Over. And I mean, I'm sure there are others, but those are the big three,
mm-hmm.
right? And Paul's thesis that he outlines many times,
mm-hmm.
in Christ there's neither Jew nor Gentile, for you're all one in Christ. And that's in this debate. He also, slave and free.
Yeah,
male,
does
male
other
female,
things. Yeah,
male
yeah.
And female, but all one in Christ.
Yep.
And Paul is firmly on the no. You know, you don't need to
you
do,
do
any
not
of that
need
stuff.
You do not need to be Jewish to follow Jesus.
Yeah, and thankfully Paul wins. So,
mm-hmm. Well, thankfully for us, because we get to eat bacon.
It's a beautiful thing.
Yeah. Or also we're Christians and now have to be Jewish converts, right?
I mean, yeah, but that lets us eat bacon. So I'm just getting to the point.
All right, so he is writing to Romans, and he doesn't have to, at this point, address those things.
Right.
They've at least been somewhat settled at this point towards the latter half of Paul's ministry career.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like Paul's theology is kind of winning out, and even, you know, the other apostles are kind of like giving in to some of it, right? Like Peter has a dream about eating food,
yep.
and then it's like, you know, maybe food's not that big of a deal.
Yep.
You know, mm-hmm. like, and then in like the last meeting with that Paul has with the Jerusalem Council, they're like, okay, look, here's our the rules for Gentiles. This, like,
yep.
don't eat food sacrificed to idols. And yep. Paul's gonna be like, cool, 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 cool. Guess what?
We're gonna
do it. You can eat food sacrificed to idols. Guess what? It's fine. Like,
yeah.
So he's fine. He's like, sure, that sounds great, but actually no. So,
yeah.
Yeah. But in this Roman church, which Paul is yet to visit, you know, we have a mix of Jewish and Gentile believers mm-hmm. figuring out life together.
Particularly, we have a power struggle between the Jewish and Gentile believers. Correct. Because the Jewish believers were kicked out of Rome for a while. All Jews were kicked out of Rome for a while. And then and in that gap, all the Gentile believers kind of, you know, appropriately continued leading the church. And when they mm-hmm. came back, they were not treating one another nicely.
Aww.
They were not using their words like yeah. their voice. They were, yeah.
So one of the disagreements is mm-hmm. going to be over food. Right.
Yeah.
What food over communal meals? We're having a meal together.
Okay.
Okay. We get it.
Family style.
Yeah.
Bucket of chicken in the middle.
Sure.
I'm just painting a picture for us.
Yeah. I appreciate the person who brings the bucket of chicken.
I do too. That's why
the potluck.
That's yeah. why I named that first. Yeah. Right. That's on the table. That's right there.
You know
who gets the leg? Who gets the wing?
It's the least likely thing to give you botulism at a potluck.
Is it?
I think so.
I think so too.
I'm not sure that KFC has ever been my list of least likely thing
I
to
mean,
give me botulism.
Fried. Like that's
a casserole
safe.
With tater tots in it. I'm like, I don't know about that. Tater tots were good on their own.
Fair.
We don't need to
yeah,
ruin
need
them,
to mess them up.
With green beans.
What tater tot casserole has green beans in it?
Lots.
All right. You're eating the wrong tater tot casseroles. Mm. All right, keep going. What do we got?
All right. All right, so they got communal meal.
Yeah.
Should that be kosher?
Oh, okay.
Because like, hey.
Because
hey,
some people are Jewish.
Some people are kosher, right?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
All right, so Paul's going to say like, he's not going to come down with one way or the other. He's not going to say like, no, bacon on everything. Bacon wrapped everything.
Right.
Wrap the table in bacon. Wrap your cup in bacon.
Tempting like, though it may be.
I'm pro bacon wrapped. You know,
yeah.
if I hear the two words bacon wrapped, you know, the third word is already kind of irrelevant. I'm
yeah.
like,
right.
ooh.
Like, yes.
I'm considering it.
Right. Yeah. He kind of says this. Hey, some Christians
mm-hmm.
are weak and some Christians are strong.
Wow.
And the strong should defer to the weak.
So are we calling people who don't eat bacon sissies in this? Because
well,
it seems like it goes that way.
It's not a physical strength yeah. thing, right?
Bacon makes you strong.
Right.
I think the element here is that if for some people they need to keep kosher to feel that that spiritual connection. Yes, Paul is describing that as weak.
Weenie.
but what I think what's kind of genius about Paul's writing
yes, yeah.
is he leaves room for both sides to think they're the strong ones.
And that they should defer mm-hmm. to the other.
And that
yeah.
they should defer to the other. Like so like both yeah. sides could be like, actually, we're the ones who are strong because we're keeping strict dietary things.
Yep.
And the other group is eating whatever they want. It's hard to do this. That makes our faith strong. And the other side is thinking, well, we're the strong ones because we're not bound by rules and laws. We trust in the grace and of God
yep.
about what we eat. And so we're the strong. We actually have stronger faith because we're not bound by that. And so they both sides are thinking, we're actually the strong ones.
Yeah.
And we should figure out how to make the weak ones feel welcome.
Mm-hmm.
And I think this is great. I think this is really good stuff here. This is one of the smartest things Paul writes a lot of things. I think this is a smart way to settle this argument.
Yeah.
Because mm-hmm. both sides want to pretend that they're the strong ones. No side is going to come to the table the next week like, I'm weak. Listen
That's
to
right.
me.
Defer to me.
Yeah.
More bacon on this table. I'm so weak. I need more bacon on this table.
I'm so weak. Just put it in my mouth. Yeah, and so I think like this is the first way kind of maybe today in our
yeah.
church we're not having the same debate, but like we have to think through what if I look at the other side of the political aisle as
mm-hmm.
weak, how would I as a strong Christian support them? If I yeah. think they're the ones filled with fear, anxiety, they're the ones filled with anger as a driving motivator, or they're the ones filled with injustice and are at least turning a blind eye towards injustice, and I'm willing to guess both sides would say this about the other on
mm-hmm.
some level.
Mm-hmm.
How do I, as a stronger Christian, care for them? You
yeah.
know, like, and
yeah.
I think that is kind of the thing. And for Paul, the strong Christian does not like flex their theological muscles or bully them into doing what I think is right.
Sure.
It's serve them.
Mm-hmm.
And that is really, really difficult.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like, that's going to, you know, when you think of like a polarized church, that's really hard to say, like, what you should you do is you should serve the people against on the other side of the political aisle.
Mm.
And you're like, mm-hmm. I don't want to.
Yeah.
You know, like, yeah. No. I'd rather argue about bacon. I'd yeah. rather have that.
I argument. Definitely would rather argue about bacon. Mm-hmm. That yep. goes without saying.
Yeah.
That's because I know I'm right about bacon.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. I can win that one. Yeah.
That's an easy argument to win.
Well, yeah. Pan fried or baked? You know, what's the way to cook
Ooh.
It?
Oh, pan fried.
Pan fried. Yeah.
I mean, there are lots of acceptable options here.
Yeah. I mean, I would crispy or soft.
Crispy.
Oh,
100% crispy.
Depends on the bacon. If you get a thick cut where it's crispy on the edges and then just a little chewy on the inside, that's a very good piece of bacon right there.
That's crispy.
Mm. Yeah, if it's a little bit crispy, it counts as crispy.
But if
yeah.
you get like the really thin, like paper strip bacon, like yeah. that just crumbles. I don't want that like burnt, like, yeah.
Yeah, no.
I want a little chew to my bacon.
I think the debate was not thin versus thick. I think it was crispy versus
but I think
floppy.
That you can't, I think you can't have thin versus thick without having... Or you can't have crispy versus floppy without having thin versus thick. That's okay. what I'm saying.
I've had some floppy thin bacon before, though.
You definitely have, and it's yeah. not good.
It's
that's
not
true.
Good.
That's
yeah.
true. That is not
yeah.
true.
Yeah. I would rather err on the side of burnt and then yes. on okay. the side of flop. Yeah.
It feels safer. Yeah.
I'm 100% with you. Yeah. And tastier. Yeah. So I think that this is, you know, again, what is it? So how do we, if you're like, I'm a strong Christian,
yeah.
how do you serve the weak Christians on the other side of the political? How does that
yeah.
look?
Yeah.
Maybe let's talk about that.
Yeah. I think that's the... That's the connection that we have between Romans and us today, right? Is that we might not look at ourselves and say, oh, we're arguing about bacon, but we do have these divisions. And so how can we put ourselves in the position of a servant to the people who are around us? And I think it starts with what you were saying, Patrick, is like, how am I putting myself into their shoes and thinking about their needs versus thinking about my own? And we both sides have an opportunity to do that, right? If you're putting yourself in the position to serve another, then you're putting yourself in the position of their needs matter more than mine in this particular moment. So if they need safety, okay, how do I provide them safety? If they need encouragement, how do I provide them encouragement? If they need an opportunity to, I don't know, I'm running out of ideas off the top of my head, right? Mm-hmm. But you're putting yourself in the position to serve in the same way that Jesus does when he washes feet, right? It's a very intentional symbol from Jesus to say, okay, this is how you yeah. lead other people, is by serving them and by lowering yourself, putting your own pride, your own glory aside in order to serve someone else.
Yeah, I think it's also maybe saying, like, the issues that you see as the forefront of our community, like, I hope we get resolution to those in a healthy way. Like, if economic yeah. issues are driving your vote,
sure.
you know, especially in this past election, say, like, I do hope that the price of goods comes down mm-hmm. for, you know, the middle class America. I hope that. I hope that, you know, if immigration is driving that idea, like, I hope we have immigration laws that are
yeah.
supportive for everyone, you know, mm-hmm. that naturalized citizens, legal and illegal immigrants, that like that they're humans. We support everyone, even as we, you know, have to, as a nation, protect our border, whatever that looks like. You know, like, we can still empathize with kind of their point of view a little bit, even if I disagree with the, even if I think the means are not justifying the ends. Yeah,
sure.
So,
mm-hmm.
Yeah. All right. Let's move on, because we got some more.
Oh,
it's not just this.
Okay.
Yeah.
That was seemed like a pretty good one. All right.
That was yeah. good. Yeah. All right. So let me, yeah. First, the next, the idea of judgment.
Okay.
Because Paul's going to write, don't judge one another. Okay. And that's good. Instead.
And we've nailed that, and it is so easy.
Peace, okay.
Therefore, stop passing judgment on one another. Instead, make up your own mind not to put any stumbling block or obstacle in the way of a brother or sister. And this is Romans 14:13.
Mm-hmm. Oh, this right. is used so frequently as like a modesty argument for mm-hmm. for girls.
Yeah. Well, let's take it out of that context, because yeah. that's not what Paul is writing about. But yeah. yes, I hear that. And we honor that. And we, mm-hmm. yeah.
So.
Honor is maybe
interestingly
not the right word.
Enough, yeah. you know, in the Greek, therefore, let us stop passing judgment and make up your own mind, kind of the same word.
They
have the same root words.
Yes.
So instead is saying, like, let's stop passing judgment on one another. Probably maybe a different translation would be, instead, judge yourself.
Yeah.
Like, yep. you start there, you know?
Yeah.
You know, like, instead, judge you. You know, like, and so if I look at the other side of the political aisle, like, they're voting based on fear, I would say, like, am I?
Yeah.
You know, at mm-hmm. least like at least make those observations. Am mm-hmm. I also voting based on fear? And if that is a motivator for me, how can I empathize or at least understand it as a mm-hmm. motivator for them? You know, so Any other thoughts on this, on how we should first judge ourselves?
Yeah, I think, again, we can point back to where Paul is connecting to the teachings of Jesus, which he certainly would have had passed on to him through others, right? Where Jesus says, don't judge the speck in a neighbor's eye before you look at the plank in your own, right? As long as there's, as long as you're unaware of your own position, your own faults, your own shortcomings, you have no basis on which to judge those around you. Now, once I've identified the plank in my own eye, right, that doesn't mean that I can go like, oh, but you've got a speck, right? Like, that's also not the point. Like, you know, there's a recognition of like, okay, this is my thing. This is the thing that's in my eye. Now, how do I go back to step one, serve this person who has this this speck in their eye? How do I still see this person as God sees them, which is not as a person with a speck in their eye, but as a person who's a beloved child of God? How do I serve this beloved child of God?
All right. He's got more, but I'm gonna bring up just one more here.
Okay. Final one.
And that's freedom.
Freedom!
Yes. Yeah.
You can take our lives, but you can never take... Oh, sorry.
That's a terrible Scottish accent.
It was awful. In my defense, it was a better Mel Gibson doing a Scottish accent than it was a Scottish accent.
I'm for it. Yeah. I'm for the Braveheart quotes. Yeah. So Paul's also going to write about freedom. And here in America, obviously, you know, that's a thing.
We like freedom.
And Elise, I think you even mentioned like somebody was like, that you know, was like, now, thankfully, we can be free after this past election.
Yeah, and I'll call her out because I know 100% she's not listening to this podcast. I'm not going to say her name. But yeah, she a friend of mine this morning, no surprise to anybody that I'm not like a Trump fan, but she posted that now freedom feels a little sweeter and more secure. And I think that's a fascinating take. Like, and I also first admit, like, I do not understand that at all.
Yeah.
Like, how somebody who comes across as very authoritarian and, like, removing of freedoms for many, many people is the person who people feel like is restoring freedom.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, I mean, like, the idea and concept of freedom is not foreign. In fact, Paul writes a lot about freedom, and the book of Galatians has got a lot to say about freedom.
Some really great stuff, right?
And some awesome stuff. Yeah. So we're gonna hit a little bit of high points here in Romans.
Okay.
So we're going to get some greatest hits. Because for Paul, the Christian of freedom, the Christian understanding of freedom is very, very different than the American understanding of freedom.
Mm-hmm.
Like, Paul basically's understanding of freedom is like, here's the deal, you guys. You're a slave, and you're going to be a slave no matter what.
Yeah.
Like that's the reality. Yeah. Like that's the reality. And you have a choice, though.
Ooh.
And your choice is, will you be a slave to sin?
Okay.
Or a slave to righteousness?
Ah.
Yeah. So in Romans 6:18, you have been set free from sin and have become slaves to righteousness. You know, in Paul, like, the idea of, like, I'm free, therefore I can do what I want
does not exist.
That's not a non-starter. Like, he's like, that's insane. Like, that is not the Christian message. It's like, you're free, and so you serve righteousness.
Mm-hmm.
And that is how he kind of understands it. And I think he's, you know, and if we're really going to get into deep dive here in Paul, the idea is, like, if you are not serving righteousness, you're actually a slave. to sin and selfishness and the world. Like, there is no other option.
Mm-hmm. I think we get tripped up on what righteousness is, though, right? Like, I think that maybe the core issue here is that we have very different opinions on what constitutes righteousness.
Agreed. Because some people will be like, yeah, I'm a slave to righteousness, which is a bunch of rules.
Exactly. Yep.
And then you should obey those same bunch of rules that I'm obeying.
Right.
Yeah.
And forget about the, you know, elevating the disenfranchised and the poor and the needy.
Sure.
You know, like, forget that. It's about the thou shalt not. Like, I don't know.
Yeah. So maybe what does that mean? How does one be a slave to righteousness? I get being a slave to sin. Like, I understand that.
Mm-hmm.
Like, and in many ways, we can point to levels of addiction. Like, that's a very real, like, it overtakes. And ultimately, like, it's hard to even have choices when you're so addicted to blank.
Right.
That I get, I can understand that. But how does one become a slave to righteousness?
Yeah, I mean, I think it starts with the same concept, right? That you don't live for yourself, right? If you're a slave to sin, you're living for sin, even if you're not consciously thinking about that. And so when you're a slave to righteousness, you are living for righteousness. And so every action, every step, every word that you speak or do, right, those are all pursuing that righteousness, and particularly that righteousness of Jesus, right? That's it. You are a slave to the righteousness of Jesus that's put upon you. And one of the things that, you know, Paul gets extrapolated by future theologians, including Martin Luther, right? Luther will say the freedom of a Christian comes down to that you're perfectly free and no one else is in charge of you, but you are also a servant to everyone around you. This is kind of how Luther describes it. So you, in your freedom, you become a servant to everyone.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And I think that's what serving righteousness, or becoming a slave to righteousness, looks like, is that in my freedom, I now am free to serve everyone. And I'm not serving you because I have to. I'm not serving you because I'm getting something out of it. I'm serving you because I am free. And I mm-hmm. want to let you see that freedom in me so that you also can be free.
Yeah. The reality is, like, if Harris Walz was elected president last week,
mm-hmm.
there would still be poor people in your community
yep.
who need resources. There would still be hurting people in your community who need love. And yep. there would still be mourning people in your community who need support.
Yeah. And guess what? Those people are all there right now.
Yeah. And those people did not go away. You yep. know? And so, like, even if everyone you voted for was elected,
mm-hmm.
the work in your community is not absolved. It's yeah. not over.
Right.
Like, it's not like we fixed it. Like,
and it's not like they're fixing it for you.
Yeah. yeah.
Like, whoever you voted yeah. for, in this case, the people who were elected are not fixing it for you. It's yeah. not how this works.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And again, and even if the other side won and you were a fan of the other side,
yep.
it wouldn't have fixed it right. either. Like, yeah. you know, yeah. like, you know, like, there still would be people in your community that need to be loved and to be served. And I think that, yeah, that Paul is going to say, like, it doesn't really matter who Caesar is.
Yeah.
What matters is who are you a slave to?
Paul is absolutely going to say it doesn't matter. Like, Caesar yeah. does not matter to Paul.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
The only thing that matters from as far as Paul is concerned with Caesar is that because Caesar's in power, Paul is a Roman citizen and Paul has the ability to appeal to Caesar. And Paul wants to tell Caesar about Jesus.
Yeah.
Like, that's the only thing that matters as far as who Caesar is to Paul. Otherwise, the ruler doesn't matter. I'm gonna go and I'm going to serve the people there. I'm going to proclaim yeah. Jesus. I'm going to live my life. I'm going to care for the poor. And yeah, the other authority does not matter.
Yeah, so I think that this is part of what it means to be a polarized church, is saying mm-hmm. like, whether I'm elated or dismayed, how do I see myself as actually a slave to righteousness?
Yeah.
And that is going to drive me to care for the least of these. Or at least I think it should be.
Yeah.
And if it's not, mm-hmm. I would maybe ask the question, am I a slave to righteousness?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like, is that what's happening? Or am I a slave to something else?
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I think this takes us back to Paul's original point too, right? That there is no longer Jew or Greek, right?
Yeah.
They are one in Christ. And that is, I think, the division in the modern church that I think separates us from the division in the Roman church, is that right now it does not always feel like the division in the modern church understands that we are one in Christ.
Yeah.
Both sides assume that Christ is only on their side.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the Jews and the Gentiles in the Roman church, I think, at least as Paul, as I read Romans, I think, both understood that Christ was for them.
Yeah.
They thought there were particular ways that you should follow Christ, but they both understood that Christ was for them. And right now, it feels a lot like Christ is for me and against you within the church, right? Not like you over there that's outside, but like within our walls. And I'm not speaking directly about Lord of Life, but within the...
Yeah.
The church universal, right? We're having this conversation and it feels like Christ is for me and against you. And that is missing the central message of Jesus and of Paul in Romans, that you're one in Christ.
Yeah. And I think
you're not divided by any of that other stuff.
Then we get twisted, like, I am living for righteousness by being against you.
Right.
And that's what we people land on, of like,
yes,
if I am the loudest keyboard warrior and the most obnoxious person at the PTA meeting,
I'm sorry,
I'm
keyboard warrior. I just imagined someone with like a little 1980s guitar, like, thing going
like
around.
Like,
yeah. Sorry.
Yeah. And all right, yeah, I'm the loudest person
yeah.
at the PTA meeting. I'm a slave to righteousness. Like, you know, like, yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
On their guitar, yeah. Yeah. Like, I think that's, people are confused, like, thinking this.
Yes.
That is not what Paul is talking about.
No.
And that yeah. is not, even if you're on the side that I like,
yeah,
that is not what it's supposed to be like. Yeah. You know, this is not what it looks like. And so I think that for all of us, whether you feel weak, strong, whether you feel elated or dismayed, we have a unique opportunity to show, like, this is what, how we serve and love one another.
Yeah.
And for a world that I think does want to feel that.
Yeah.
Like, I think both sides want to feel hope right now. And the church has an opportunity to show it.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if they will, but I think we could.
Yeah, I mean, I think the church, as much as anybody, is guilty of looking for that righteousness to come from something other than Christ.
Yeah.
Right? And we ourselves, even as the Lutheran church, we forget that grace comes from God alone.
Yeah.
And we try to earn our grace through our pursuit of justice issues. We try to earn our grace from our pursuit of the law. We try to earn our grace through all sorts of stuff. And we forget grace is already yours and grace is already theirs.
Yeah.
And all we can do is serve one another. All we can do is look to love one another. And yeah, we forget that. Sorry, I feel like it ended us on a bummer. I didn't mean to end us on a bummer.
It's okay to be like, this is kind of a bumming time.
Yeah, but yeah. I didn't want to be the bummer.
We're hungry and we're tired. And
I gave you a cookie before this podcast. You're
and
still
I'm hungry again.
I didn't get a cookie.
Oops.
What is this? Wow. Okay. Well, I'm the strong Christian and I'm going to forgive you.
Right.
Weak Christians for hoarding your cookies.
I was a strong Christian and I was removing sugar from your midst. I don't know. Yeah, sorry, man.
Yeah.
No, I don't think you need to make decisions for me. You know, that's not a strong Christian.
Okay, fair
fight,
enough.
Fight.
All right. Well, hey, if you enjoyed this episode, send us an email. Let us know what you're thinking. Let us know what you're hoping for and praying for the church, for our country, whatever. We want to hear your hopes and prayers. We'd love to hear that. You can send it beyondsundaypodcast@gmail.com. And of course, you can find all of our episodes at beyondsundaypodcast.com.
All right, thanks for listening, everybody. We'll be back next week with more Beyond Sunday.